Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Think back to the first time you heard that Babe Ruth had called his shot. Changed your goddamn life, right? Changed your life. That might be the oldest moment I led into the first Hall of Fame. I don't even care if it actually happened. But what made that moment cool is the delivery. Saying you're going to do something means nothing. But if you deliver on what you say you're going to do, fantastic. Now, let's talk about the 2016 NBA Dunk Contest. First off, on a surface level, at the heart of both of these, you have the most ostentatious way to score. But deeper than that, every year the NBA says it's going to be fantastic. They say it's going to be a signature event of the NBA All-Star Weekend, maybe of the entire year. But when they deliver on it, when the guys actually deliver, when it does live up to the hype, I think it's as good as anything in sports. And in 2016, Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon put on the show of shows. And when you start considering the effects of social media and all the dunks we see beforehand, and more importantly, the limitations of the human body, I think you have to consider whether the 2016 NBA Dunk Contest is the greatest dunk contest we can ever see. Now that's a hell of a question. That and more this week on First Ballot. Welcome to First Ballot, the podcast that celebrates the moments in sports that really matter and inducts them into the First Ballot Hall of Fame. This isn't just about great sports moments. It's about the moments that matter. It's been said this show combines the flair of Skybox with the top shelf prestige of Upper Deck. Who said that? I did. I'm your host, Neil, a.k.a. the Glass City Cobra, the long-lost Gasol brother, the Reebok pump god, the podcast Jordan Clarkson, half Filipino, half not Filipino. I'm not the biggest Lakers fan. I am the best Lakers fan. You might know me as Mr. Never Ever Wrong, coming to you live from the Shaquille O'Neal Office Depot, big and tall executive suite desk chair. The First Ballot Hall of Fame podcast is brought to you by... Ball is Life and the Ball is Life Podcast Network. The Ball is Life Podcast Network has got some big things cooking up. They're cooking up some big things. Excited to be part of the team and the brand. Follow them on all socials at Ball is Life. The 2016 Slam Dunk Contest final between Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon is an absolutely world-class sports moment. But is it a First Ballot Hall of Famer? We have to decide that today. And here to do it with me might well be my favorite writer working right now. Simply put, I think he's an artist of the highest order. My guest is an award-winning poet, essayist, and cultural critic. His writing has been seen all over, everywhere, including the New York Times, The New Yorker, Billboard Magazine, and more. He's the author of, among others, the National Book Award finalist, A Little Devil in America. He also wrote Go Ahead in the Rain, Notes to a Tribe Called Quest, and... They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us. He has a new book that I am so very excited about. It's called There's Always This Year on Basketball and Ascension. In 2021, our guest won the prestigious MacArthur Fellowship Genius Grant. Good God, why is he on this show? He is, like me and LeBron James, a born and raised Ohioan, him by way of Columbus. He's a proud Beechcroft High Cougar. It's the exceptionally talented, the genuinely gifted Hanif Abdurraqib.
Wow. Yo, thank you. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Where in Ohio are you from?
Toledo, Ohio. Actually, just outside Oregon, Ohio.
Oregon, for sure. Yeah.
Have you ever been to, do you ever spend any time in Toledo, Oregon?
You drive through it, you know, anytime you go to like Detroit, yeah, you kind of drive through.
That's right. Or to see, we're close to Cedar Point. We're a little outside of Cedar Point. Yeah, I'm sure you've been.
Yeah.
And you're still in Columbus now. You're back in Columbus now. Is that the case?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been back in Columbus since 2016 and hope to be here for, I don't know. I mean, forever, as Prince would say, forever is a mighty long time, but I do hope to be here for, you know, for what feels like a good long time. Yeah. I don't want to say the rest of my life, but for a long time.
Salt of the earth, Ohioans. That's what I always say. Hanif, set the table for us before we get started. This is a way the audience can get to learn who you are and what you're about. Tell us your favorite sport, your favorite team, and your favorite athlete of all time.
Well, I grew up playing both basketball and soccer. I played soccer in college. And those are probably the two sports that I most gravitate towards. My favorite teams, you know, I'm a big Columbus Crew fan. I'm a Newcastle supporter for those who are into the Premiership. And most notably, I'm a Minnesota Timberwolves fan. I'm also a Connecticut Sun fan, though I'm going to now become in it. I'm a Connecticut Sun fan. It's my WNBA team, but they're so far away from me now that I've become a Fever fan by default.
Yes.
Because the Fever are so close. But now I feel like saying I've become a Fever fan by default feels like I am bandwagoning on the inevitable Caitlin Clark moment, if there were a closer W team to me, then I would go to that. You know, it's just now, though, I might be priced out of Fever games, it seems, the days of me going to Fever games for just a few bucks seem to be over. So, that's kind of a rundown.
I'm going to go even farther. I'm going to call you a liar openly on this recording and say you were becoming a Fever fan strictly because of Caitlin Clark, and I completely 100% get it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I wish it doesn't look like Ohio's going to get a WNBA team back ever again. And so now I'm going to just full on, I'll say that I'm bandwagoning and committing fully to the Fever, the Fever.
Can you think of very quickly, this is not in the script here. I asked this on a recent podcast to another guest. Can you think of a college basketball player, man or woman, that you've been this excited about before Caitlin Clark? Who was the last college basketball player you were like, I have to see what this person did last night. I have to check this person out for March Madness, et cetera.
You know, I've never been this excited about one who had pro potential like Caitlin Clark. Yeah. Because particularly on the men's side, you know, I'm thinking about like Jimmer Fredette, who I loved watching. Yeah, yeah. But it was also, you know, I know he went, seventh in that draft of Kings. But it was like, this guy's not a pro. Yeah, or at least not a pro that will have a long career.
Right.
And you know, there are guys like that, you know, where I trend towards those kind of guys in college ball. Adam Morrison was kind of like that. And these guys who are kind of like great college players that don't have a lot of pro potential that I can see. And I think Caitlin Clark is someone who's, I mean, obviously it just looks like the game is going to translate. Yes. And I will say Steph Curry was like that for me when he was at Davidson. Mm-hmm. And I did not think the game was going to translate. And then, of course, it did.
Yeah. Isn't that beautiful? I would have said the exact same. Steph, for me, I just presumed was going to get stomped out in the league. I did not think it would last. I did not think he could do this. And him changing the game is 100% part of his legacy. And I'm so excited to say the same thing about Caitlin.
Yeah, it's going to be a thrill to watch. I mean, assuming health for everyone, Fever team is going to be really thrilling to her and Aaliyah Boston. It's just going to be a fun time, and I'm going to have to start saving money for tickets now, I guess.
They're really great. I get to watch Maureen Johannes for the New York Liberty. Yeah. She's another one that it's just the entertainment is off the charts with her, and I'm blessed to have her here local to me. The next thing I have is I have a tweet of yours. This is really going to be a disturbing trend. As I think about this episode, I started researching you. I started thinking about things I want to talk to you about. And I found a tweet, the one I'm about to read you. And I wrote it down and I went, well, I gotta read this tweet to him because it really brings me joy. I really enjoy it. There's a brevity to it that I love. I know exactly what you're saying. I know it says a lot about you as a fan. And I gotta talk to him about this tweet. And then as I'm looking through, I go, I want to ask him about this tweet as well. And then I just start writing down all these things that you've written or said that I go, now I want to ask him about. And I'm realizing all of the non-basketball, non-dunk contest stuff that I wanted to talk to you about is all going to be me going, can you give me more time on this thought than just this tweet? And that to me is the beauty of your Twitter feed and your social media post is I go, give me 20 on this thing. Go longer. The first the first one I want to read to you, you tweeted the 4th of December, 2023. I just knew if I lived long enough, I would eventually have a favorite NBA player named Tyrese. I presume that's Halliburton.
Halliburton, but I also love Maxey. You know, I have two at this point. I probably love Tyrese a bit more. I was rooting firmly against him last night because the Timberwolves played the Pacers. I'd have two, it seems. Mm-hmm. Tyrese Halliburton is another one. You know, like, I'm thankful that Indiana's close enough. Yes. I've been to a couple Pacer games, and this Pacers team, particularly this year, I think is just exciting. They're not going to do well in the playoffs because they can't defend, and there's some holes there. But they're just, like, really, you know, I sometimes really just want a thrilling regular season team, you know?
Yes.
The Kings were kind of like that last year. And I watched those Kings teams and knew that they would not be
That's right.
You know, they did give Warriors a decent fight in the playoffs, but you kind of knew they weren't going to get past the first round.
That's right.
It almost didn't matter because they gave us so much pleasure in the regular season. So, yeah, Tyrese Halliburton's like, dresses, his fashion sense is a bit outside of my scope of, you know, he's like a character from Newsies a bit. But I don't know. I know so little about fashion, so I'm maybe the wrong person to ask.
And you're talking to the wrong guy if you're looking for any sort of take on fashion. I completely understand what you're saying. That Atlanta Hawks team from a number of years ago had that great regular season. They bring enjoyment. They're exciting. You watch their games. I would say the difference is with the Pacers. My guess is every team in the East does not want to see the Indiana Pacers in that first round because they're just exciting enough. They're just fast enough that you have no clue what's going to happen and who they could knock off. So they are a blast. I appreciate you liking Tyrese Halliburton. Your taste is exquisite. Your writing is sharp. It's precise. The combination of those two things, I honestly just kept going, wait, I have to ask about this tweet. Here's another one from Hanif Abdurraqib, July 24th, 2019. I get that this is how far back I'm going. I'm like 5 years back in the tweets. I'm very sorry that I'm doing this.
No, this is great.
Get that you are all tired of me talking about Whitney Houston, but the way she really lands the end of the T sound at the end of the elongated heat in the second chorus of I Want to Dance with Somebody is one of my favorite music moments. Pardon, it was one of my favorite moments in all of music. Let's listen to that together. Okay. This is the type of specificity that brings me joy, that really brightens my day, and makes me feel like I really want to be friends with this guy. I deeply want to be friends with the guy that goes the T at the end of Heat is what really gets me.
Yeah, it's such a forceful sound. I mean, I think it's also just good vocal arranging too, or good intention, intentional, you know, because without that, the long vowel sound becomes almost so elastic that it renders the word itself, the word heat, it would render it almost indecipherable. And so to put a really hard T on the end of it kind of grounds the listener in what they're hearing. Otherwise, you're just kind of like floating in the ether of vowel sounds, which I love. I love a vowel sound. I love when singers elongate vowel sounds. But if we rely too much on the vowel sound, then words can kind of become elastic.
I love a good vowel sound too. I've never heard anyone say that. This is what I'm talking about. That's fantastic. Yeah. Like, you are giving me exactly what I want, to ground the vowel sounds. That's so good. Okay, here's another one. I'm sorry, I'm like moving fast. Eventually I'm going to slow down, but I have a number of tweets I want to get through. The next one, let's stay on music again. Brilliant music writer, Billboard, the Tribe book is fantastic. You tweeted, the Raptors should do their starting lineup / intros to the Jurassic Harlem instrumental. That feels like a layup. Actually, not that I need another job, but while I'm here, the NBA should hire me to pick the starting lineup / intro music for every team. Let's Let's listen to that together. Here it is, Jurassic Harlem instrumental. Let's go! That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, it was a song by Poster Boy that, and Poster Boy was a rapper who, you know, this is in the era of like 106 and Park freestyles, yes. And they would have Freestyle Fridays, yeah. And he just won a lot. He won a lot of Freestyle Fridays, and it was one of those things where that kind of led to him getting a short-lived record deal.
Yes.
And nothing really came out of that record deal except, I think, you know, Jurassic Harlem and a few other songs. Jurassic Harlem is incredible. It's like, I've never heard a sample flip like that, like sampling the, you know, it's incredible.
It's so good. Here's the next tweet. Someone posted the in-season tournament custom courts. I believe this is like the Atlanta Hawks, yeah. That hideously painted custom court. You retweeted and said, these are atrocious / I love them. Please explain.
Well, there's a real hideousness to them, I think, but they're so fluorescent in a way. I'm drawn to color. I'm so drawn to color, and I'm so drawn to these kind of adventures in color, that it's almost tempting to me.
Yes.
You know, these kind of color disasters that the NBA has done, not just with the courts. I kind of long for the days of the more colorful, disastrous jerseys, or yes. The jerseys with the gigantic mascots across, yes. The front, that Hawks one that had, yes. The Hawk on it, or the notorious Raptors one. I kind of miss that, and I felt like these courts were a kind of throwback to that. I will say they did not, I don't think they looked good in practice. Like, right. You know, people playing atop them did not really look great, but they looked good just kind of standalone. It's like, yeah, one of those things. Yeah. It's like a sneaker or outfit where you looks good in the closet, looks less good on the person.
Right. Yes, I totally get that. And I agree with you on an attraction to color. These did not film well, but at first blush, you kind of go, oh, this could create some interesting visuals. I just think it was a slight miss. I'll be curious to see what they do next season's in-season tournament in terms of the court. I think the games were special enough that you don't need to dress up the floors, but we'll see. Is there an if you had to pick an old throwback jersey, is there a clubhouse leader?
Oh, I think it is. For me, it's definitely that Hawks one that has the Hawk
stretched across the
yes. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think that's a home run. I mean, I know that we got rid of the Washington Bullets because of the whole Bullets thing, but I did like those, the two L's being the kind of, I mean, in retrospect, it's not ideal, but I like those. I really like those. And, you know, I think those were cool. And I also just, I loved that Sacramento Kings jersey that was split down the middle. That was half mm-hmm. purple, half black. Mm-hmm. I loved that too. You know, it was like, that was a real interesting era for jerseys broadly. Really, and I don't know if I want it back. Like, I don't know if I want to look at those all the time.
Right.
but I think it was more adventurous than it is now. I think there's a way more.
I totally agree. Here, the last tweet before we dive into our moment. Boardroom posted highest NBA mascot salaries, which is a wild stat to make public. Rocky the Mountain Lion, the Denver Nuggets mascot, makes $625,000 a year, which blew me away. Harry the Hawk for the Atlanta Hawks, I guess I knew they had a Hawk mascot because it makes sense. It's a bird and you can do the costume and everything, but it makes $600,000. And then Hugo the Hornet at the bottom makes $100,000. You retweeted that and said, Rocky got Hugo saved in his phone as, quote, that broke ass bee. You then replied to it saying, I probably need to think this through this more, but off the top of my head, the best NBA mascot name. I can't even believe you wrote this. I can't believe you made this public. I have such a bone to pick with you. Best NBA mascot name you believe, Stuff the Magic Dragon.
Oh, I don't remember writing that.
That's you funny. Did. You wrote it. You committed it. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
I want to pitch you Benny the Bull, which I think is better. I think everybody knows his name is Benny the Bull as well.
Yeah, I think everyone actually knows. I think it helps if everyone knows the name of your mascot. I think most mascots. I know Rocky and I know Benny the Bull, but if I had to like go through and name the actual names, I mean, I know that the Suns mascot is just the gorilla.
Yeah.
And I know Crunch because I'm a Timberwolves fan, but right. If I had to go through and like name the actual mascots, I don't know the names of. I know what they look like, but I don't like know.
Same with me. I know. You know, I want to pitch you another one that I believe is better than Stuff the Magic Dragon, who is going to come back up. The conversation on Stuff the Magic Dragon is going to happen here a little bit later with Aaron Gordon. In terms of a goofy mascot name, I also submit that the Sacramento Kings mascot is named Slamson the Lion. It's a lion, and his name is Slamson. I believe that also to be better than Stuff the Magic Dragon.
That is better. That's great. Slamson.
I don't want to be combative with you, but I just want to give proper credit to something like Slamson. Okay.
I'm glad I vaguely remember what Slamson looks like, but that's one of those mascots I don't see a lot. I feel like the Kings, some teams have mascots that don't get a lot of FaceTime not as much. I watch a lot of ball. Like I have League Pass. I watch, and even when you're watching the League Pass broadcast of Kings games, which is like piped in directly from their local broadcast, you don't see a ton of Slamson.
That's right. I agree.
Whereas some mascots, it's like they're, you know, every single break, it's like I've seen the gorilla a million times is enough.
That's right. I'd be really interested to hear the person that makes decisions on in-arena entertainment talk about why or why not a mascot gets certain play. It would be very funny to hear someone over romanticize their work and be like, yeah, you know, Hugo the Hornet's a bit of a sideshow. We'll bring him out, but we want to concentrate on the meat and potatoes of our in-arena content. That'd be a lot of fun to hear someone talk about.
Yeah, for sure.
Have you seen the clip? We mentioned Rocky the Mountain Lion, Nuggets mascot. Have you seen the clip where Rocky is lowered from the rafters?
Oh, passing out? Yeah. Yeah. That's like an iconic sports clip. That to me, that clip alone means that they're asking him to do a level of work that makes the money worth it.
That's right. It's kind of death defying in a way.
Yeah, and it's kind of freaky. That clip is kind of ominous where he's just kind of very limp and descending onto the floor.
You gotta be a real lunatic like myself to really enjoy watching a virtually lifeless body being slowly lowered to the core. We just did an episode of this show where we debate, we're starting our perhaps endless search for the funniest sports moment of all time. I think I at some point have to submit that lifeless Rocky being lowered from the rafters to put that in contention. It's a lot of fun. All right, let's dive into our moment. We have to decide whether the Zach LaVine, Aaron Gordon dunk contest goes into the First Ballot Hall of Fame. And to do that, we have to go through our Hall of Fame credentials. Those are the categories by which we judge all of our moments. The first credential, as always, as usual, analytics, the numbers. Here are some numbers behind this. Zach LaVine won the 2015 dunk contest. This was the LaVine, Gordon is 2016. So Zach LaVine is attempting to go back-to-back here. That's a big deal. Certainly helpful here. The next sort of stat the next number I want to give you, which I want everyone to think about this, these numbers, for the rest of this conversation. Aaron Gordon is 6'9 and 240 pounds.
Wow.
That's a big dude doing all of these dunks.
Yeah, that's a big dude.
He is a big dude. Do you have a preference in terms of like in a where do you land in the Spud Webb versus Dwight Howard spectrum? Do you prefer seeing the little guys do it, or do you enjoy watching a big guy get up?
As a short person myself, I definitely prefer seeing a little guy. But I also kind of do think that there's something if a big guy does something kind of miraculous, it kind of looks cooler to me.
Yes, I think so.
Because sometimes I think the little guys, they run out of imagination because of the limitations of their height. And so it often comes down to just like, let me jump over a person.
Right.
The big guys can kind of do a bit more, and I think it could be a bit interesting. And if they execute something well, it can look really cool.
By my count, 31 people have won an NBA Slam Dunk contest. Now, you're probably wondering why I'm saying by my count. And I'm saying by my count because I did count them, but as names kept reappearing, I got a little confused. And then, you know, people like Nate Robinson came up this year, and then he'd come up 3 years later. So I got a little confused as I was counting. I didn't count a second time, but I do think I'm like 90% sure it's 31 people. Zach LaVine obviously repeats. He's only there's only a few players, a handful of guys that have gone, have won the it twice and won it back to back. Hanif, I'm going to read you the names of some slam dunk champs, but I'm going to stick in one fake name, and I want to see if you can spot the fake. Again, okay. All of the men that I'm about to read, except one, all of these men actually won the dunk contest. One is fake. Are you ready to spot the fake?
Okay, so only one is fake.
Only one is fake. Everyone else actually won a dunk contest.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Number one, Derek Williams. Number two, Jeremy Evans. Number three, Terrence Ross. And number four, John Wall. Who of those names did not win an NBA Slam Dunk contest?
Williams. Derek Williams.
Damn. Really handled that.
For sure. Evans, if I'm not mistaken, Evans, Ross, and Wall won in back-to-back-to-back years, right?
They did. That's exactly right. It's also what I might refer to as the Nader. That's the bottom, right? That's the
I feel like that's the only reason I remember it, because it was like post Blake Griffin, you know, that's post Nate Robinson, post Blake Griffin, and it was just really bleak. And Derek Williams is in one of those contests, though.
That's exactly right. He's in the Jeremy Evans ones. He comes out on the back of a motorcycle, which is being driven by Crunch the Mascot, which was truly a visual I'll never, ever forget, because I roared with laughter.
Yeah, that was a very high. I mean, I think we've gotten, there have been really high points of props in performance and really low points of props in performance. And that was like a low point, attempting to be a high point. Jeremy Evans like jumped over a painting of himself. I think that is what won him the contest.
I don't even remember Jeremy Evans jumping over a painting. That's fantastic. I am okay with the prop, but I think the prop should be funnier. Like I once said, I want someone to just dunk a ball. No prop involved with the dunk. Dunk a ball, have a great dunk, and then have someone standing just out of bounds with like a large pizza, and you just pull a slice out and just start eating a slice of pizza. I want the props post dunk. I believe post dunk celebration is where you can make a lot of points, get a lot of extra points through prop work. Your thoughts there?
I'm into that. Yeah.
Last stat for analytics here. This is the dunk contest where the most 50s were awarded. I'm not 100% certain that's true. I did not find that stat. I'm making it up currently, but I think it's probably right because there are a ton of 50s throughout this dunk contest. Truly a show. All right. The next credential is the eye test. What did we see in this moment that makes it special? As you think about this dunk contest, and particularly the finals, is there something that sticks out to you the most as additive, something that might jack up the candidacy of this moment for the first Bell Hall of Fame?
Well, I think that the controversy itself, it was controversial that LaVine won.
Yes.
I think a lot of people felt like LaVine shouldn't have won. And there was like post dunk controversy because Aaron Gordon you know, took it very personally and then like later made a song and all this stuff. And so I think the controversy is there, but also this could go down as, I don't know if it's the best of all time, but I think that for a lot of like millennials and perhaps elder millennials, it's maybe the best dunk contest of their lifetime. You know, because Vince Carter in 2000, that was a transcendent performance, but it felt like he was running away with that one.
Yes.
You know, this was like a real actual competition.
I completely
It felt like they were going back and forth. Now, to the point of the 50s, the problem with the dunk contest has always been that 50s come out too early. Because once a 50 comes out early, there's no room for correction or adjustment, or you're assuming you've seen the best thing you're going to see all night, but then that's not the case because something even better happens. Or it just makes it hard to score. So a flaw with this competition is that the 50s came out too early. But one, I mean, another thing is Aaron Gordon did win one of the best dunks. I mean, just from a, if we're like slow it down, you know, that the dunk where he kind of is like sitting in the air, it's like sitting down, his legs are like up, you know, that's a, you know, that's like a gravity defying dunk.
Yes.
And I, you know, that to me is just one of the single best dunks I've ever seen in a dunk contest.
I couldn't agree with you more. To me, I think it is. I think it's, that's the best dunk I've ever seen. And I go back and watch these things not infrequently, quite frankly. And then certainly because of this show, I end up doing this type of work. I'll go back and rewatch Vince Carter jumping over Frederick Weiss. And I'll go back and rewatch, you know, Jordan from the free throw line, Dr. J early on, et cetera, et cetera. This, that Aaron Gordon dunk over that mascot where he's sitting in the air, I think it's probably the best dunk I've ever seen in my life, period.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. And the thing is, there's no way, like in any other world, he wins the contest on that dunk and the dunk that follows it. Yes. But, I mean, you know, we can like go back and forth on whether or not LaVine deserved the 50s he got. I think he did for some of those dunks, maybe, if we're adjusting the scores for inflation and saying, you know, the 50s came out early and so the 50s are what we have. Right.
Hold on, let me ask you a question then. Is there a LaVine 50 that you thought maybe shouldn't have gotten the 50? Can you think of a dunk from LaVine that you're like, that maybe that one comes down?
Yeah, I think the second to last 50 where he kind of threw himself a pass, kind of on the sideline, put it through his legs. It was just too similar to his other dunks.
I see.
And now that's a difficult dunk. It was incredibly graceful. It looked beautiful. But I think that it was a little similar to the other dunks. So the dunk, and I think that's compounded by the fact that Gordon got a 47 right after that dunk, right after that LaVine dunk.
Yes.
And I think that Gordon's dunk was at least as good as the LaVine dunk. So to me, that is where Gordon should have won. Is a second to last dunk.
I agree.
You know, Elfrid Payton had that alley-oop to Gordon off the side of the backboard. That got him a 50. That's, to me, that's a 50 based off of this scoring metric. LaVine's dunk after that, probably not a 50.
Got it. I think we are completely aligned here.
Yeah. I will say, I think LaVine's last dunk was a 50. I think that last dunk was absolutely a 50.
Agreed.
But it maybe should. I think the argument that has been made throughout history about this dunk contest is that it should have never come down to that last dunk, and I think I agree with that.
Right. I agree with you, and I also agree that there is a – it's a fascinating dichotomy to consider because you're right. Zach LaVine does do a lot of dunks that feel similar. They feel like fruit off the same tree. It just happens to be that – what he's doing is so outlandish and so difficult that as he does another one somewhat like it, if you still can consider it in a vacuum, you got to go, yeah, that's fucking nuts too. Like, it's every dunk they do, they're fucking nuts.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it's, and I think he also looked smoother.
Yes.
Perhaps.
So what is that?
Gordon didn't look smooth, Jordan, but I think because of Gordon's size.
So I have that. I have that exact note in my eye test. What is it about Vince and MJ and Zach LaVine, and I'd even add Sean Kemp? What is it about those guys that even if they do a dunk that's fine, they make it look like high art? What is it about their ability?
I don't know. I mean, LaVine specifically, I think, just really looked effortless. I think there's an effortlessness to it.
Yes.
Aaron Gordon always looked like he was exerting effort, which I like. I think that's, you know, he was, and so it should appear that way. But I think there's judges for LaVine. I think judges tried to kind of trend it toward rewarding a sort of performed effortlessness. He always looks so cool dunking. He always looked like he could just do it in his sleep, you know?
Yes.
Vince Carter too had that, you know, that kind of there's something about Gordon's dunking that was more forceful. It seemed more, I don't want to say energetic, but it seemed like there was more behind it.
Yes.
It seemed like he was working harder. And I think judges perhaps expected if someone is presenting to work harder, you know, to maybe show something else, to show something unique.
Carter, Zach LaVine, even MJ to an extent, they have that long, lean body, and they're good about catching the ball away from their body. It's Zach LaVine's third dunk, which is a 50. He gets an off-the-bounce 360 sort of windmill. But when he catches it off his bounce, he catches the ball away from his body. And as he does the 360, his arm sort of stays out. And then as he windmills the thing in, he also seems to, the impact of the dunk seems to be coming at the moment his body is starting the descent. So it seems like right. there his the gravity of him coming down is adding extra force, and that long lever of his arm is really out and sort of helps the visual. There is truly and sincerely a still in every Zach LaVine dunk that will make you like kiss someone on the mouth. There is like a single still where you go, look at that. It's truly breathtaking.
Yeah, he's a miraculous dunk. I mean, even now, I think he still looks wonderful dunking. There are some people who just look good dunking, who are seemingly aware of the aesthetics of the form of dunking, if you will. And he's one of those people, you know, he's one of those people who really, I think, understands that the dunk is to put on a show. And Aaron Gordon is someone who I think is a very, even now, has always been kind of a ferocious in-game dunker. You know, even now you'll catch him kind of self-satisfied when dunking on someone.
Yes.
Which I really enjoy. I think they're a part of the reason why this dunk contest was so great is because the two of them are just very different dunkers.
You really do. You bring up the idea of them knowing the aesthetics of the dunk. To an extent, it's a little like this podcast. There are sports moments that are great athletic achievements, a great buzzer beater, a great touchdown catch, a big home run, whatever the case might be. And then there's stakes. And then there's the attitude and the flair and the comedy and the humor and the entertainment that you bring to it. And that makes it extra special. These guys don't just have great concepts and great dunk ideas. It feels like they understand the visual of what's happening. And just gorgeous, gorgeous dunks. Fantastic to watch and rewatch and pause and still and, you know, fantastic pictures. Another eye test thing I wanted to suggest to you, some of the great courtside reactions in slam dunk history, slam dunk contest history in this one. Will Barton, Zach LaVine was reacting to Aaron Gordon's, Andrew Wiggins, Cat, Boogie Cousins, John Wall, Steph was courtside, was having fun. It was great to see a superstar out there enjoying it. And then Dikembe Mutombo was a judge, and he was giving us everything as well. Your thoughts on the reactions?
His facial expressions. Yeah, incredible facial expressions. There were people, I forgot who it was. Someone was like falling out of the chair, at their chair constantly.
Yes.
And there's this great photo from that I remember of Cat, Wiggins, and LaVine like huddled together while LaVine is kind of charting through his plan with the two of them. And I remember that moment specifically because I was like, man, this is the future of the Timberwolves. I remember being like, this is it. This is a, you know, I think for Timberwolves fans, some of us are like, this is it. This is the big three. You know, these are going to be the three guys who lead this team into the future.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, that was not the case. Although I really think it could have been if they would have just stuck a little bit longer. I think, you know, Wiggins was a little miscast. So was LaVine in that role, but they could have filled into their roles adequately.
The last dunk, which was Zach LaVine's last 50, it was the sixth dunk of the contest. between the legs from the free throw line.
Yeah.
He did both a windmill from the free throw line and between the legs from the free throw line. And he caught an alley-oop from the free throw line. And again, all similar dunks, but also dunking from the free throw line with ease multiple times and with different variations. That's nuts to even think about. Anyways, after the last dunk of the contest, which you said was a 50, I believe was a 50, Jerome Williams shows up. The Junkyard Dog hasn't been in the league for 20-plus years. Somehow he ends up on the court celebrating with Zach LaVine, which I appreciated as well.
It felt like a real communal, you know, it felt like the league also felt like the dunk contest was back, like extremely back,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
So I think some of the celebration we saw was also because of that. I mean, LaVine had won the year before, and LaVine won the year before pretty, I think, handily. But to have a dunk competition that felt like a real competition, yeah, it felt like the whole thing was back. It was real.
It felt, this is my opinion, as you watch, as they get into the finals, and after like the first two finals dunks, the first two 50s in the final round, to me the comparison is, it honestly, I mean this sincerely, it felt like a great heavyweight fight. It you couldn't believe these two men kept trading heavy shots,
yeah,
and that they stayed at that level for so long. Are you a boxing fan at all? Do you know that vibe? Do you know that energy?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It is wild.
Yeah. And it also felt like surely one of them would just run out of things to do.
Yes.
Like that's, I think, you know, my approach watching this was like, okay, well, this is cool, but surely one of them is not, that will have nothing left soon.
Agreed.
Because it just seemed like it had been going on forever. And from the beginning, it seemed like those two were maybe destined for that collision course. I mean, it did seem like they were, quite simply better than everyone else who was there. To get to that ending point was just a real thrill.
The next credential is the ear test. What did we hear in this moment that might make it special? Listen, I usually play announcer clips here. I'm not going to play a ton because there's honestly so much to listen to. It's Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, Reggie Miller, Kevin Harlan, and Kevin Hart on the call. Those guys are all fantastic. They worked well together. There's a lot of great stuff to listen to, so I had to cut this down. I do want to play a quick joke from Chuck. Now, this is after Zach LaVine's first dunk. Andre Drummond, who's in the contest, I think he's dunking next. He gets up and walks out of the frame. He's like panicking about, oh my God, I got to dunk after this dude. And he sort of gets up and walks out of the frame. Here are the guys reacting to that moment. Let's listen to it together. And listen for Chuck's joke.
Got it. Totally got it. Got it.
Oh, Drummond about ready to leave. He got up and was like, I'm out. I'm gone.
Well, he just got to wait a couple more dunks. He will be.
What's going on with that?
Chuck. Chuck is the best.
I don't even really remember what Drummond did in that contest. That's how.
No clue.
You know, don't remember that's how LaVine Gordon focused this is.
Here is. Can I play the call for you, Hanif, after, again, what I believe is the greatest dunk I've ever seen? This is the call on Aaron Gordon jumping over Stuff, the Magic Dragon, and going under both of his legs and dunking it overhead. I can't even believe I'm saying those words. It sounds so obscene to even say and act like it was a real dunk, but we all saw it. Here's the call for that moment. Now they're going to get into the replays. Now TNT is going to run the replays here in a second.
Listen, that made me take the headset off.
Yes. Come on, man. It's time to go home, man.
Oh, my God.
Let's go home. 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 We're not here. Take your jackets off. Let's go home. That's what I'm talking about.
I love that Kenny Smith, this really is like Kenny's signature event. Like, this is the thing that Kenny is the best.
Oh, yeah. He really buys into it.
Yeah, he really does. I love it. My two things were, one, I think it's worth mentioning here that Tim Kiley, who was a previous guest on the First Bell Hall of Fame podcast. He was the showrunner of Inside the NBA. Tim Kiley had, through Inside the NBA, destroyed those old school traditional rules of television where you can't talk over this guy or that guy. And in a dunk contest like this, to have those guys climbing over top of each other to say something really creates some excitement. I love that part here. And then the second thing is Kenny Smith pulling out the "it's over and let's go home." And then Aaron Gordon didn't win this dunk contest. I can't believe the "let's go home and it's over" got used on a dunk contest where that guy didn't end up winning. That's amazing to me.
Didn't end up winning. Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember either if this was a one. Like, did Aaron Gordon get that dunk on the first try?
First try.
I mean, that's another thing that was incredible about this dunk contest. If we're talking about like eye test stuff, I know we're on ear test, but so much of this stuff was done on first attempt. And that's really
a huge, part
uniquely impressive.
You also, this is another tweet that I saw from you. You were talking about the Gerald Green blowing out the candle dunk.
The candle,
and
yeah.
You referenced the fact that that dunk suffered from people not exactly being able to see or know or understand what he was doing. And there was something to this dunk contest where it was crazy, crazy concepts, but it was just visual enough and strangely happened just slow enough that when they made him on the first dunk, it wasn't a lot of people going, "Wait, what did he do?" You saw it. You knew it. You understood it. Perfect.
You fully execution. Understood. Yeah. I love the Gerald Green dunk, but yeah, it really relied on close witnessing, which I just don't think that kind of granular witnessing is not something that the dunk contest is known or noted for. I think you need something that where everyone can at least register what is happening on the first watch.
Yep.
Because the thing about that Gerald Green dunk is, you know, they showed the replay up close and it required, I think, like two replays in order for people to kind of go, "Oh,
that's right."
And I love that dunk so much because of that. But it does require, it requires a lot of close looking.
I'm seeing now your tweet is actually about the Vince Carter stuffing his arm in the rim dunk, where it's the same thing. You kind of take a moment and go, "Wait, what did he do?" And then when you realize his damn near his entire arm is in the basket, you go, "Oh shit." And on replay, it's like amazing. But it seems like live, it would be hard to catch that right out of the gate because I had never seen that. I had never seen someone stuff their arm in a basket before because that was like pre-YouTube. And then I had never seen someone go under both legs. I'm sure someone at the Flight Brothers had done it before, but I had never seen someone go under both legs, let alone a guy that's 6'9", 240.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Carter thing was good because at least he hung on the rim a bit so that if there were any doubt, you know, he'd be like, "Okay, now I see his whole arm is there."
Oh, good.
But yeah, it's the Gordon stuff, I think, you know, is spectacular in approach and due to his size and Aaron Gordon, you know. Aaron Gordon is someone who came into the league as kind of a tweener athlete, so to speak. And I really have a lot of affection for the way he's developed his game.
Yeah, totally.
And watching him in Denver, I mean, he gives the Timberwolves an incredibly hard time. He gives a lot of teams a hard time, but he really kind of just is a nightmare for the Timberwolves. And so I'm often cursing him, but doing it with a kind of warmth and gratitude.
Yes, I'm right there with you. Like I just recorded an episode with Ashton Batuso and we were talking about an old Nuggets Blazers playoff series. And I was saying, look at the two paths these teams have taken since then. And when you think about Denver upgraded from Paul Millsap, no disrespect to Paul Millsap, but to Aaron Gordon, who is not just a really good scorer, including as a outside shot and phenomenal on the boards, but he is a great defender. It really depresses me how perfectly he fits alongside Jokic and how much better he makes the Nuggets. Really devastating as a Lakers fan. I loathe that team. Yeah. I loathe watching that team. The last thing out of the ear test is the announcers, as the finals continues, the announcers start openly debating, Wait, so how can we get out of this contest? Because it's just been 50 after 50 after 50. Like, people start going, what if we do a three-point contest? What if we do – they have to do the same dunk. Like, they're brainstorming live because it appears in the moment as though the 50s will never end. I appreciate that from this broadcast team here. The next credential is You Mad. Rob, play my camera on clip here.
You mad.
Thank you so much. You mentioned Aaron Gordon being mad and feeling like he was robbed after the fact, and you also mentioned the song. What do you remember about him being pissed off here?
I you know, that song that I remember is funny because I still to this day don't know how serious that song is. I forget what it's even called.
I actually downloaded the song and I've got it ready to play for you. It's called 9 out of 10. Here's a little snippet we can listen to together.
Yes.
Even Adam Silver told me I deserve the gold. Didn't get the trophy, but I got something to hold. These forgive me, bro. I won't sell my soul.
Your thoughts? Your thoughts on those lyrics, Anish?
Yeah, now looking back, I guess it is a bit serious. the video just seems so comical. I remember he's like sitting in his like mansion with a glass of wine, and the night is closing in on him. It's so strange. It was kind of like and I think it was like a couple years after the dunk contest. Maybe I'm misremembering that. It wasn't right after though. I think that's what made it a bit odd for me, was that it wasn't immediately after. It was maybe like a year and a half after. And it was like, oh, he's still thinking about this. And
yeah,
look, I think for me, that's good. That is like good for the game. Yes. If, you know, of course, people derided. He was still on the Magic and they weren't great. And I think people were like, well, he should be more focused on winning. But it's like, yeah, sure. Okay. I like winning games, you know, for it's like, yeah, I feel you. But also, this is just like theater. This is entertaining theater. Is it a little weird? Yeah, for sure. But I don't know. Players have done worse and weirder things and held far stranger grudges. And there's a playfulness to it that I appreciate.
I agree with you. The sort of pregnant pause before the song comes out is a little peculiar. That said, it does take time to come up with lyrics like these.
Even Adam Silver told me I deserve the gold. Didn't get the trophy, but I got something to hold. These forgive me, bro. I won't sell my soul.
I mean, he makes a D's Nuts reference. He makes a D's Nuts joke. Those don't just fall off trees. I need you to know that.
No. Yeah, he was struggling to write that one. I could tell. Yeah. It took him years. He's like, got to cook this up. You got to get in the lab with this.
In the lab. Okay. The next credential is our test of time. And if you brought this up earlier, I'm going to cede the floor to you here. Is this the best dunk contest ever? Are you putting Vince up against it? What about Neek and MJ? If you've got to pick one, which are you picking?
I don't think Vince is in the... I mean, Vince was a great performance, yes, but the intensity of that contest is not as high as, say, Neek and MJ in this one. For me, I'm picking between those two. And I would pick this one only because I lived through it. You know, like, I'm not... I think that is my bias, is because I saw it in real time.
Right.
You know? But I also think... I will say, I think Neek and MJ was kind of revolutionary in setting the stage for what the dunk contest could be.
Yep.
And so there's a level of influence. Now, the dunk contest doesn't often live up to that influence or that standard set by Neek and MJ, but that's not... That can hardly be blamed on Neek and MJ themselves. So yeah, I mean, I think that I value and respect both of them, and I definitely value and respect the influence set forth in the Neek and MJ one. But I think this is the one for me.
There's a common thread through all three: Neek and MJ, Vince, and this one, and it is that when you see performances like Neek and MJ, Vince, and Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine, you go, I understand why they keep running the dunk contest out. Like, can you, if they didn't have a dunk contest in an All-Star week, I'd go, so wait, we're not even going to try and see if we can have another one of those? Because when it's good, it's really out of this world.
Oh, yeah. When it's good, it's like very worthwhile. Ugh. The downside is, I will say, when it's bad, it is, when it's bad, it's like really hard. When it's bad, there's like a level of... Yeah, the one a couple years ago, for example, was just atrocious. So, you know.
When it's bad, you've got Derek Williams on a motorcycle. I mean, that's what happens. The next credential is burning questions. I'm going to make it a burning question / devil's advocate. Listen, this moment has up until this point had a yellow brick road, a golden path to the first ballot Hall of Fame. I want to try and put a pop the balloon here. Are there any lost points for Aaron Gordon showing up to his first dunk in a tearaway tuxedo and cane?
I mean, yeah. Well, yes. This all goes into like the flaws of the pre-dunk prop, right? Mm-hmm. The flaws of the pre-dunk prop that suggest, because no one really cares about that.
That's right.
But it is when it's bad, when it's like corny, it's memorable.
Yeah.
100%. And the corniness of that was richly memorable.
All right, that's strike one. Strike two, do you hold it? Now, Aaron Gordon has a number of great dunks with Stuff the Magic Dragon, who, again, Hanif said is the best mascot name in the business, which, listen, you can write him a letter. I get it. I don't agree with it either. He has a number of great dunks. He's got the one where he jumps over Stuff while he's on a hoverboard. He takes the ball out of Stuff's raised, you know, Statue of Liberty arm as he's rotating around. And then, of course, most notably, he jumps over Stuff with both legs up in the air, goes under both legs. Any points deducted for having such a goofy looking mascot? As you think about for posterity, as you think about the visuals, as you rewatch an Aaron Gordon dunk in that dunk contest, are there any points lost because there's a, you know, a dragon that has like party favors coming out of its nose?
No, I think that Stuff being goofy looking is enhanced, but that enhances the whole thing. Like a goofy looking mascot, because it's like a clown show, right? You can lean into the clown showness of it all. And there's no, I mean, Stuff is absurd looking, but that kind of makes it, you know, Aaron Gordon's taking this dunk contest seriously, or one has to, at least to some degree, take it seriously enough to, you know, to do the dunks well. And you're rolling out this weird dragon. I'm into that.
I'm into it too. Okay. The last devil's advocate thing. This is where I bring this entire moment down. I bring it to its knees. I'm about to not put this thing in the first ballot Hall of Fame, and here's why. Zach LaVine is wearing that goddamn sleeve jersey.
Yes, the sleeve jersey. Really bad times. I am not big on the sleeve jerseys. I forgot that he had those on. But I will say, miraculous that he was able to perform in such a hideous outfit. Because those are not great. Not great at all.
That's really flipping it on its head. You're not just saying this was a great performance by Zach LaVine, but he did it technically wearing sleeves, which makes it all the more impressive. That's fantastic.
Yeah, he did it in spite of the material not working in his favor.
We had a guest on previously, Jason Gallagher, who does all of JJ Redick's stuff and video for his podcast. His idea was bringing in Hollywood directors every year, letting a Michael Bay 1 year direct the performance so that you're getting truly world-class visuals out of the replays. If you do that sort of thing, you need to let a fashion expert come in and go, you cannot wear those alts. You cannot wear the sleeve jerseys. We have to think about the way this will look forever. And I think that they missed that here. And that's a real, real knock against this moment is those sleeve jerseys.
Performing with those jerseys is somewhat admirable because it feels like it would be slightly movement prohibitive.
Yes, I completely agree with that.
Imagining that, but it feels like it would prohibit movement to a degree.
Prohibitive. Movement prohibitive. I love this. All right, next credential is Twitter fingers. I don't care about other people's tweets of this. There were a lot of great tweets about this moment. I want to go through more Hanif tweets. Here we go. You wrote, What is your favorite NBA game-winning shot of all time? Actual buzzer-beating game winner. No time left on the clock. Again, I love that specificity. You said, I have a few, but was thinking recently about how much I loved this Damian Lillard one that happened in the moment. It's his first game winner against Houston. Let's listen to it together.
9/10 left. A three wins the series. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years.
You finish a call like that and you just push away from the table and throw your headset on the table and throw your hands up in the air and walk away, right? You finish that call and you go, well, that's it. I just nailed it.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a wrap. I mean, that comes to mind. Of course, Dame has the you know, very prominent one against OKC. The Kawhi one is just so, I know I'm like, this, all of this is like recency, I think. But that Kawhi one is also just incredible. The one against the Sixers to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's just incredible. I mean, and so, you know, I love even the potential of a buzzer beater. I love kind of hoping to see one. There aren't enough in Timberwolves history, or at least there's not enough that have been performed by the Timberwolves themselves. There have been some that have worked against the Timberwolves, which has been heartbreaking. But yeah, I love a buzzer beater.
You mentioned the Dame wave buzzer beater, the wave goodbye to the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's the first episode of this podcast that I did with Dragonfly Jones, and I will say I rewatched that moment alongside this Dame in Houston, and I think what makes it special is this. I'm going to play the Houston one once more, and then I want to talk specificity. Here it is again.
9/10 left. A three wins the series. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got
it! It's the horn happening before the ball goes in the basket.
Right. Yeah, hearing the horn is ideal.
To hear the horn and then hear the basket is absolutely fantastic. To hear that, it raises the stakes on what's going to happen. Did this team win or lose the game? And that sound before the basket is a gigantic part of what makes a buzzer beater great.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think forever hearing it before the basket, or in the case of the Kawhi shot, it's kind of even better because you hear the buzzer and then you hear the ball kind of bouncing around bouncing around the rim a bit. So yeah, those sonics improve it. The sound always improves it.
It's really good. You say, here's another tweet from Hanif. Somebody posted the video of LeBron at a post game conference holding Malcolm X's autobiography, and you tweeted. Of the LeBron lying for no reason moments, the autobiography of Malcolm X moment is by far my favorite because it is pure 100% got called on in class to give a summary of a book you didn't read, but you're stalling by speaking in vague, extremely broad terms. Can you make sense of him and the lying, particularly on the Malcolm X book? Why? What is that?
The Malcolm X book thing was puzzling because he was carrying the book around as though he wanted someone to ask him about
it. Yes.
You know, and it doesn't make sense because it seemed like he could have at least maybe read a summary or even just like, I don't know, mentioned something from Malcolm X's life. But it was strange. It was a strange one.
There is something. It is a strange that he doesn't like, don't even address the book, just flip it and make it about Malcolm X, the man, and just tell me the things you do know and go, I love him because of X, Y, and Z. Like, just go to him as a guy. There are a lot of ways to get out of that lie. And I do, my hat's off for even being audacious enough to try and pull that off. Fantastic from LeBron.
He's I think the LeBron kind of, excitedly embellishing things from time to time. It's just a part. He's like a hyperbolic guy.
Yes.
You know, there's a way it's like, look at this hyperbolic dude who's just excited about things.
Yeah.
I can cut him some slack
on
that.
Okay, we'll do it. I'll do it too. Here's the next Sinéad tweet. You tweeted, once I was on a date with a person who ran down all of Tristan Thompson's illicit behaviors, and I didn't know any of it, so it was genuinely fascinating, and I didn't know what to say in response except, well, offensive rebounding is a skill that will always keep him on an NBA roster.
And it is. I mean, I don't know if he's rostered right now, but I wasn't wrong there. I mean, he's like a, you know, he's a, you can have him on a roster and he'll contribute.
That's right. Did that really happen?
He was on a roster as late as that really happened. This was a person who was, I don't know much about like the Kardashians and stuff. So
yeah.
This person was like schooling me on the Kardashians, right. And you know, Tristan Thompson is a, I don't know if he still is, but at one point was a major character in the Giant Kardashian universe. I learned a lot, and then I didn't have much to offer except to say, you know, he's an incredible offensive rebounder. And he is, he was rostered as late as last year in the playoffs.
That's
I feel like
he went to he was on the Lakers as a bench, and he played. He played in the Lakers Western Conference run to the Western Conference Finals, so he actually had game time last year in the purple and gold.
I don't think you want Tristan Thompson playing serious minutes for you right now.
You do not.
But you know, he has also. It seems that he is also not someone you want, perhaps. In a committed monogamous relationship. So
the next tweet you have, you wrote, the league pass halftime shows have not been giving me a lot so far this season. Respectfully, I'm just not going to watch eighth graders dance to Future, though I'm happy they got the opportunity. They just got to start publishing Red Panda schedule alongside the NBA schedule. Your thoughts on that? Please give me more on that thought.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think Red Panda's done. Have you seen Red Panda? Do you watch
Red Panda? Red Panda.
Everyone knows Red Panda.
She's a dynamo. Red Panda. I'll even go further. The first time I saw Red Panda, I was genuinely so stunned that I ended up, one of my ideas, I worked with Marshawn Lynch, and one of my ideas was, hey, Red Panda, will you come and just do your bit in front of Marshawn so he can watch it and react to it? And we did it, and it went very well, and it was super funny. And it's because Red Panda is a genuine miracle, and Marshawn is the funniest guy in the room.
Gosh, that's incredible. I would have loved to have been in the room for that. Yeah, I mean, Red Panda, I feel like she hasn't done a ton of NBA this year. She's doing a lot of college, but she hasn't done a ton of NBA because the halftime shows, I think, are, and I do watch a ton of League Pass, the halftime shows are maybe as bad as they've ever been.
Yes,
I think.
I agree.
And I say this respectfully, of course. But sometimes it feels like, so I was at a Cavs game. I was at the Cavs Knicks game on Sunday, and they did a thing where they honored Dan Gilbert's son who passed away a few years ago.
Yes.
But they did like a jersey, you know, unveil, they were like retired a jersey for him, they did the unveiling. But then it was like, okay, there's just a lot of dead time now.
Yep.
And there's nothing happening. And that's kind of what halftime shows have been.
That's
right. It's been like a lot of a small thing and then a lot of dead time.
I completely agree.
And I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if there's like, if we're cutting corners and, you know, I just don't know. But the halftime shows have been really a bit of a downer for me. Just have not been the same as they have been in the past. And that's been a bit of a bummer. I would watch, I mean, I know that I would just watch wherever Red Panda went, you know, though the Red Panda performance is essentially kind of the same.
But still like a Zach LaVine dunk, still you go ahead and stand on a gigantic unicycle and kick 7 bulls under your head, knock yourself out.
Yeah. I would watch it 100 times.
If all things are equal and I'm watching, you know, if I've got to choose between 4 teams and 2 games, if I know Red Panda is a part of one of the halftime shows, I'm 100% checking out that game. That's for sure.
Oh, I mean, yeah, absolutely.
The next and last Sinéad tweet, and I love this idea. You retweeted Dunk Comp, who has been on the show a bunch of times now. I love the guys at Dunk Comp, my favorite NBA video account, full stop. They posted a Facundo Campazzo highlight reel, and you retweeted it and said, Campazzo definitely has the best incredible highlights to minutes played ratio in recent history. I love that idea because I don't know that I've ever seen Campazzo play in an NBA game, yet his mixtape is off the charts.
Yeah, incredible mixtape. And he, you know, he had a tricky time because I think he like got memory hold due to just kind of, you know, and he was on those 2020, 2019 teams and the bubble teams and all that. And he didn't play a ton because he couldn't really defend. But he was great to watch.
He really, you know, was a blast.
He was kind of like he was like King's Jason Williams.
Yes.
But in smaller bursts because he got fewer minutes.
Right.
And so I think because he got fewer minutes, he was not under the burden of being like, I need to be the kind of point guard who can lead a team to victory like Jason Williams was faced with. And he kind of, you know, Campazzo could just kind of get in there and goof around if he wanted to.
As someone that has a world-class name like you, Hanif Abdurraqib,
yeah.
Do you look at someone like Facundo Campazzo and go, like, whose name do you think is better? Do you like yours? Do you like Facundo Campazzo? Which one makes you happier?
Well, I mean, mine makes me happier, but I love his name. I love his name a lot. He's like a perfect example, I think, of someone who has a very musical. There's so much musicality to his name, and I think his name reflected the way he played a lot. You know, there's a kind of musicality with which he played that I think showed up in the name.
Here's another. I love that idea so much, and it's gonna fold into another name that I liked. I've never put it in those terms, but I've always loved the name Clyde Drexler. And there's something about the name Clyde Drexler that sounds a bit like the way he played.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It's smooth, right? It's
yes.
It kind of stretches. It seems like it takes long strides to get there. Oh. And it's a great basketball name. Like there are good athlete names, like, you know, but there's a good basketball name that's its own thing.
God, I could listen to you talk about anything. Okay, here's the next credential, the X factor. Everybody knows what an X factor is. Do you have an X factor for this dunk contest? Is there anything else that you think will help this moment's candidacy?
Well, I mean, quite simply, I think the fact that dunk contests have gotten gradually worse and worse.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I think every year, and I know that we've had some Mac McClung revitalization, but broadly, I think as dunk contests get worse, this will be the one that will rise to the top. Just, it is rising by virtue of everyone else sinking. it's rising by virtue of all the other ones floundering.
That's so funny. I will say my idea for fixing the dunk contest, as I have said many times before over years now, I want this patented. I want to own the copyright on this. Don't dunk over people, dunk on them. Bring out a defender, bring out a rookie big guy, and boof it on his head. Tell him to try and block the shot and smash it. That's what I want.
Yeah. Bring out your enemy.
Yeah.
Bring out your sworn NBA enemy and dunk on them.
Like Draymond would do it. Particularly end of his career, Draymond, he gets it. He knows entertainment. He'll come out and try and block your shot, and you just smash him and send him into the basket, into the stanchion. It would be a fucking 50 forever.
Yeah, people would love to see Draymond dunked on. People would, you know, there's a real market for this.
Yeah.
There's a real market for both dunking on people and people seeing other people dunked on. Especially if the defender is trying. If the defender is like making a real earnest attempt.
Yes, it's important that they try and go get the ball. And it, you know what would be great is if they – I'd be really curious to watch the first time the guy that's the defender blocks the shot. I think it will jack up the intensity of the following attempts and make it even more fun. I'm telling you, NBA – Bring me in. Dunk on
That's
somebody.
The answer.
I think it'd be great. Okay.
Yeah.
Hanif, it's time for more important. It's America's favorite podcast segment. Hanif, I'm about to ask you a series of questions. All of your answers to these questions will be more important than anything else you've been talking about in this episode. They will define who you are as a man on this planet. Are you ready for more important?
I am ready.
The music is playing. Here we go. We got to go fast. What is your diner order? It's late at night. You're at a diner. What are you getting?
I am getting two scrambled eggs and some potato combination, preferably hash browns, and then a milkshake.
Wow! Off the board with the milkshake to combine with the hash browns. I like that. And saved it there at the end. The next question, more important. Please name a celebrity you're pretty certain you'd be good friends with.
You know, I don't really know anything about him, but I read an interview once where Sterling K. Brown just seemed really nice. I mean, I know about him. Like, I know the performances that he's been. I've seen the work, but he seems like he'd be fun to hang out with. I think we'd be cool. We could go record shopping together. I also will say, though, that I think Tori Amos and I would be friends.
Let's go! That is Stone Cold E.T. over, of course, Genuine's Pony, which I'm sure you know very well. I love the Tori Amos answer. I also, record shopping with Sterling K. Brown sounds like a goddamn afternoon. That sounds like a great afternoon. Here we go. Next question. What is the best sports nickname you've ever heard?
I don't know. I'm gradually loving Rudy Gobert. I'm coming to love Rudy Gobert. But I don't adore him. But I love the, you know, Stifle Tower is one of those names that just doesn't translate to, you know, you can't like say it out loud, but you know, in a game, but I like it. Stu Grimson, the Grim Reaper. I love that for Stu Grimson, the hockey player. The Matrix, Sean Marion, the Matrix was great.
Very good.
I mean, I think calling Jason Williams white chocolate is very funny. And also, it's one of those nicknames that's very much of its time. Hilarious. And if I can give one more, Night Train Lane. I love Night Train Lane.
Oh, so good. Hanif, I had Van Lathan on, and we connected over my favorite nickname. They called Tommy the Hitman Hearns. Another one of his nicknames was they called him the Motor City Cobra, which I adore.
No way.
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
Because there's no Cobras in Detroit, Michigan that I know of, except for, I guess, Tommy.
Not Hearns. A single one. yeah.
Hanif, next question, more important, dunks or passes?
I'm a point guard. I grew up playing point guard, so I love a good pass. I love a flashy pass. More importantly, I love like an accurately placed pass. you know, I love a daring pass. But you know, I do of course like seeing people get dunked on when the opportunity arises.
Do you have a favorite pass? Favorite pass of all time?
There's this Chris Paul bounce pass where he threw it through someone's legs. And it was like right on the money through someone's legs. And LeBron has a couple like that too. The Jason Williams elbow pass, gosh, if only Larry Fulfrentz. You know, I don't think Larry Fulfrentz was expecting the pass. But yeah, he missed the layup, so it's a little hard to pick that one.
You're a generous man to take that weight off of Larry Fulfrentz's back. I will not do it. How dare he not make that basket? You must dunk that basketball. It's 100% certainty. It says more about you that you're giving him that grace. I appreciate that from you.
He was attempting a layup that it's like, no, don't attempt the layup.
Put that thing in the basket 100%. Hanif, another question I love asking people. I'm really curious to hear your answer. What do you believe is the best sports branding? So we're talking color palette. We're talking logo. Alternate jerseys, the full kit, the full package. What's the best sports branding?
I like the Marlins.
Very good.
Like just throughout there.
Yes.
Yeah, the Marlins are up there for me. I'm not even really a baseball fan, but I think the Marlins are, they've got one. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I grew up watching those like creamsicle jerseys and it just seems like the jerseys have also, you know, a lot of teams like went away from the colorful jerseys and they got worse, but they stayed good. Also, I think to go to like a footballer's perspective, I'm a Newcastle guy, so this is easy for me, but I love Newcastle. I love Newcastle. I think they've done great work.
I am aghast, truly and sincerely aghast, that you went through Miami teams and did not mention the Miami Dolphins in their sports branding.
I like it. I don't love it, but I do like it. I think the dolphin is a strange mascot overall.
Well, yes, clearly, but I would argue that that's what makes it so brilliant. And I'm shocked that you would not like the old dolphin wearing the helmet in the sun. That's just fantastic.
That is fantastic. I will say, yeah, that is a good one.
Hanif, last question, more important. Please name something that really kicks ass. You can name anything you want. It just needs to kick ass. Please name something that kicks ass.
The center of a cinnamon roll.
Oh.
The like dead center of a cinnamon roll.
You guys know what's coming. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
You did it. Hanif, the double Stone Cold ET genuine. You got to it. I don't know if anybody's ever gotten there before. A fantastic answer for what kicks ass. The center of cinnamon rolls are as good as it gets. The next credential is the cosign. The floor is yours, Hanif. Does the Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine dunk contest belong in the first ballot Hall of Fame, and why? This is your closing argument.
I actually think no. I'm going to go not first ballot. It deserves to be in a Hall of Fame at some point, but not first ballot, merely because I think it also just really illuminated the issues with scoring in the dunk contest, with going 50s too early, going 50s too eagerly. It created a kind of a bad situation, I think, for dunk contests scoring. Let me rephrase that. It did not create a bad situation for dunk contest scoring, but it really highlighted the issue with dunk contest scoring.
Unbelievable. Jaws on the floor. He says no with the finish line. It's time for the induction speech. That's when I, Neil, get to decide whether this thing goes in. Listen, I'm going to take everything Hanif just said as the guest here, but this is my Hall of Fame, and I have to make the decision what I think is best for this organization and this Hall of Fame. I think you could make the argument that Aaron Gordon, based off his entire arsenal of dunks, that's not the right word, but let's go with it. Based off his entire arsenal of dunks, but certainly highlighted by what I believe to be the greatest dunk I've ever seen, you could make the argument that he had the greatest single night of dunking ever on this planet and still somehow lost the competition. And I can't even make the perfect argument against it. I can kind of understand why Zach LaVine won. I don't think he did, but I'm not mad that he did. That to me stands out as truly unique. This is a signature moment from basketball games. The slam dunk may be reaching its peak for those reasons. With deep respect for Hanif treating this as seriously as he has, I am going to put this moment into the first ballot Hall of Fame. Congratulations to Aaron Gordon, his song 9 out of 10, Zach LaVine, Andre Drummond, and Jerome the Junkyard Dog Williams. Your moment is in the first ballot Hall of Fame. Congratulations.
Congrats, yeah, truly.
Just fantastic. Hanif, I really appreciate you being on the show. You were a fantastic guest. Getting lost in a vowel sound will stay with me forever. That's mine. I'm taking that sentence with me. How can people follow you? What can you plug?
My website is abdurraqib.com. It has all my like social media stuff on there. You can also on the website pre-order my book, There's Always This Year, which is coming out. I don't know when this will air, but it's coming out March 26th. So maybe it's out already. Maybe it's coming. But you can find it in the world.
Listen to me when I say this. I say this all the time. Support this man. In this regard, I want someone to message me after this show and go, I bought Hanif's book because I heard him on this. I heard how funny he is. I heard how insightful he is. I heard how thoughtful he is. And I pre-ordered this book. Help us support this guy. He is absolutely a fantastic writer, and that's what we should do, support him. Hanif, thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
That's it. That's the show. My thanks to Hanif Abdurraqib. Support that man. I recently bought They Can't Kill Us Till They Kill Us. I'm reading that now. His new book, There's Always This Year, on basketball and ascension, is out now. Go to your favorite local bookstore. Order it online. We'll have the link in our socials. Sometimes you get the opportunity to support a good person in a meaningful way, and this is one of those times. There's Always This Year by Hanif Abdurraqib. Credits, Robbie Bobby edits the show. Jessica Singh is the captain of the ship. So lucky to have her on the team. EJ Capasalas, Filipino 2, he's our social producer. David Estramskis is the reason I'm at Balls Life. Shout out to the Balls Life team. Rhythm J, my brother from another mother, makes all the beats. Follow him on social at Rhythm J. And please come back next week for more First Ballot.
Let's go!